Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Beth Bielo, and you're listening to the Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. Between 2002 and January 2009, the blog search engine Technorati had indexed as many as 133 million online blogs. See, I almost couldn't even say the number. It's so big. With the estimated number of blogs doubling about every 6 months, some sources that index blogs report numbers as high as 400 million, and that's in English-speaking blogs alone. A worldwide estimate might approach 1 billion blogs created for as many reasons as there are people, from the blog started by Aunt Betty to share her favorite recipes, to marketing guru Chris Brogan, who dispenses pithy marketing advice to tens of thousands of readers. Since the first blog debuted in 1994, the medium has evolved from the virtual diary read round the world to an indispensable communications tool for small businesses and entrepreneurs. With that many blogs out there, how do you make yours stand out? What makes some blogs blah and others bold? Whether you have a blog right now and are interested in attracting more attention and readers, or you're just now setting up your blog and wondering how to make the most of it, my guest today can help. As a unique voice for a unique online presence, Judy Dunn of Cat's Eye Writer is happiest when she's helping people figure out who they really are, what they love to do best, and what kind of people they like to help. Then, through their blogs, websites, and online profiles, she makes sure that everyone else is clear on that too. Judy does this through blog coaching, blog critiques, and copywriting for online bios. You can subscribe to Judy's blog at catseyewriter.com. Her posts are insightful, generous, and bursting with information that will help anyone show up online in a real unique way. Judy is the author of Guide to Showing Up Online and is working on her next ebook, which focuses on effective content marketing through blogging. She's an animal lover, a former first grade teacher, and the woman to call if you need to tell someone four knives will be sufficient in Swahili. Thank you so much for being here, Judy. I really admire your work, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
It's good to be here, Beth. Thank you.
So first, I would like to set the stage by asking you to share a little bit about the evolution of your business and how I know you've set it up in such a way that it actually honors you as an introvert entrepreneur.
Yes. I think that right now, today, I am very happy being a writer and a blogger. I wasn't always a writer and a blogger, and there was no straight path to writing for me. I kind of took a torturous, winding path. I was sewing, actually, Warren Talbot of Married with Luggage. He had a blog post about letting go of all the balls because, of course, they're getting rid of all the stuff that they have, and they're getting ready to live their dream and travel the world. So we were talking about this, and I was telling him the story of leaving teaching, knowing there was something else in the world that I needed to be doing, having no idea really what it was, answering an ad, a help wanted ad in the Los Angeles Times, going down for the interview and being hired as a manager of grant writers for World Vision, which is a third world relief and development nonprofit. So I really took it, I call it leap and the net will appear, Warren and Betsy call it letting the balls go, just completely letting myself be open to whatever it was I was supposed to be doing in the world. So that ended up with the World Vision job, and then from there I became a grant writing consultant. And grant writing is a very focused, very technical kind of writing, which is very, very different from the writing I do now. It's a complete 360-degree turn from copywriting and promotional writing for businesses. But after we moved to Ocean Shores, then Bob and I founded our first real business, which we called Cat's Eye Group. It was a graphic design company, and we also offered copywriting, which I did the copywriting, Bob did the design, and all kinds of promotional writing, all kinds of clients, nonprofit, for-profit, a lot of print at the time. So I was just basically writing everything for every possible client. Later, I moved then to writing more for the web, and still my clients though were all over the place, school districts, hospitals, retail shops, service professionals. So the next big step I needed to take was to move to online copywriting and doing mostly websites. And the last step, which is where I am now, was the scariest. That was creating my niche and actually turning down clients and projects that didn't fit my niche. So that's where I am today. I'm a blogging coach and social media copywriter, and that, it turns out, is my love. So how, and I love your question about how it supports the introvert self. I've given a lot of thought to that, and in many, many interesting ways it does. I found out fairly recently something else. I'm not only an introvert, I'm an HSP, which is a highly sensitive person. Had no idea that I had the traits. Actually, they have studied our brains, and our brains do operate differently. The psychologist, Dr. Elaine Aron, came up with the traits of the HSPs, and basically we are 15 to 20% of the population, but 70% of us, 70% are introverts too. It just means that we have extremely sensitive nervous systems. We're easily overwhelmed by outside stimuli in the environment, and it affects all five of our senses, all of them. So it's really, really easy for HSPs to get into sensory overload, which makes a lot of sense on the introvert side too. The points where they intersect, I think, and how I honor my own introvert strength is liking private space and being alone. That's a big one. Much of my work is done by myself, crawling inside my brain, writing a blog post, critiquing other bloggers' work, writing books, lots and lots of private space and lots of being alone, and with that comes a lot of quiet too. I feel an energy drain in large groups, as a lot of introverts do. And when I work with others, unless I'm teaching a blogging workshop, it's one-on-one, and it's just the kind of environment I think that's best for me. Another strength that I honor is being curious and not wanting to be the center of attention. So I ask a lot of questions in my work to draw other people out. And naturally, when I do that, then I'm directing the spotlight away from me, which is something that I really like. Since I was a small child, I really hated being the center of attention, and it could be negative or positive. It didn't matter which. I just didn't like to be on the stage. Mm-hmm. And then I think the fourth way that I honor my introvert self is I'm really happy when I'm completely absorbed in an idea and I can go really deep with it. So when I moved to my niche as a blogging coach, that was just perfect for me. It allowed me to learn new things about my specialty, to dig deeper and deeper, instead of just writing across the board and across diverse areas. So I think that pretty much sums up where I am in my introvert strengths and how I try to honor them each day in my work.
Yeah, one of the things, Judy, thank you for sharing all of that, especially for sharing with us the HSP part. That's not something we've talked about on this podcast before. And like you, I recently discovered, oh my gosh, I fit 15 of these 20 traits, and it explained so much about how I responded to things in the world. But what you were saying about niche and, really being able to focus in, and that is a little scary, but it really does, sounds like it taps into your need to go deep into something and to be really focused. And I imagine that's opened up your, by going deep and narrow, it's probably opened up a whole, wealth of opportunities for you.
Absolutely. I have just, I was telling someone the other day, I have just never been busier and never been happier. It's when people, I think, know that it's a passion, it's a love, and you're building credibility and your expertise, they want to come to somebody who's an expert in the thing that they need help with. So absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was scary, but it was the best move I think I ever made.
Yeah. Well, maybe to move from that narrow niche to the higher 35,000 foot view, to even talk about what is a blog, before we get down into, specifics, but what's a blog?
It's a really good question, because people throw the term out. They throw the word out all the time. And sometimes in our blogging classes, we start with this question, what is a blog, because there are a lot of people who really still don't understand what blogs are and what purpose they serve. Blogs started as a sort of personal online diary. That's how they first started. And it was more of, you know, people's personal lives, their family, you know, the meals they were eating. And I think that people got the impression that that's all blogs were. There are a lot of definitions, but for me, I think the common traits are that they are online journals that are public in nature, and that public aspect of it is that you're posting it for anybody and everybody in the world to read. So it's public, and also I think another trait is that the content is changing all the time, and it's not like a static website where you have a home page and pretty much the same content all the time. And the third one that's really important is that blogs are interactive. So what you're aiming for some two-way communication going on. You're not just broadcasting one way, but you're wanting to get people to come in and comment about what you're writing about and share their thoughts about it too. If you wanted to define a business blog, I would say that a business blog is a tool for marketing your business by producing valuable content and getting your readers, who are hopefully your prospects and your future clients also, to engage with that content and to join the conversation. But even if you don't have that engagement part happening yet, even if you don't have, if you're writing and you're not getting comments, you are at the very minimum becoming a credible expert in your field, you're building your brand, you're developing what Scott Stratton, who's the @unmarketing guy on Twitter, he calls it social currency, and you're putting those coins in your bank, and it's trust and credibility that you're building that eventually you're going to be able to take that currency out and use it in terms of getting new clients and new customers. So I guess I'm pretty biased on the merits of blogging here.
Yeah. Well, it's what makes you so good at what you do. You are very passionate and knowledgeable about it. So you've just given us some really good examples of what the advantages are of blogging for your business, because just like Facebook and Twitter have evolved from, you know, what you had for breakfast kinds of conversations, they've become very, you know, critical and powerful tools for business, and blogs have led the way in that, I think. So part of why I wanted to talk to you is to find out, you know, with so many blogs out there, how do we make ours stand out? And I'm curious about what are the most common blogging no-nos that you encounter in your work that make the blog just not, it might stand out in a bad way.
Right. There are probably quite a few no-nos that I come up with, I think three or four that happen so frequently in my blog coaching practice that maybe I'll just start with those. Mm-hmm. The first one is a lack of a niche and a target audience. And I was just working with a client just the other day. And who's your audience? Well, my audience is everybody. You know, I want to sell my houses, and I want, you know, I don't want to turn anybody down. I want anybody who's willing to come through the door and let me show them a house, or let me, you know, blog to them about finding a house or selling a house. I just basically want everybody. This can be overwhelming to think about, but you really need to find your focus. And I think people are, again, it's that niche thing. They're afraid to do it because they're afraid they'll turn down work and not have enough work. But your reader really needs to know every time they open one of your posts that there will be advice in the one area that they're coming to your blog for. So you don't start on one specific niche and then all of a sudden start throwing out different pieces of content because that's not what they're coming to your blog for. I started my blog, I made the mistake of it being a small business marketing blog because that was what our business was at the time. That is way too huge, way, way too huge. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to just copywriting, but that was still too big. Now it's a blog about blogging, which is a very special kind of writing, and it focuses on the content side of blogging. It doesn't even get into the technical issues of blogging. So it's really about content marketing with your blog, and that was what I figured my niche was, and that is what I'm sticking with, so that every post has something to do with making you a better blogger through better content. So that was the first one, the lack of a niche. The second thing I see is not enough attention to creating an irresistible about page. And the about page is one of the two or three most highly viewed pages on a website, and on a blog, it's even higher than that. Most visitors, if they're really intrigued about your blog post, they want to find more out about you, and they want to see, who is this person behind this blog? Who's talking to me? And And so you need to tell them what to expect on your blog, and you need to open up and give something, some personal parts of yourself on your about page. The third thing I think I see are unfocused and rambling posts, and it's usually the first thought that you have for a blog post, first idea you come up with, is way, way too big. So you can take a small part of that idea, chunk it down into something more specific, take a look at that, and probably in some cases you could take even that idea and make five other individual blog posts out of it. So I like to take a topic through a process called mind mapping, and that is just a very simple, they have really expensive software programs for mind mapping right now. When I was an educator, we had big white sheets on our boards, and we would work with kids with pencil and paper or pen and paper, and you start with that great big idea in the middle. Then you start offshooting different lines and different circles, and you keep going, getting down from the general to more and more specific until you have something more manageable to write about. And then the fourth thing I see is being afraid to promote your services on your blog. I think somehow we've gotten the idea that it's a no-no to sell anything on your blog, and that you always should just give free content. The free content is a wonderful thing to do. It builds trust and credibility. But I see kind of a disconnect between all that good, valuable content and the purpose of your blog, which is to build trust, credibility, and lead people then eventually to purchase your services. So I'm not saying here that you put a bunch of huge buy now PayPal buttons all over your blog, but if you've got a couple of simple solutions you're talking about in a blog post and you're trying to solve a small problem your customer has, there is nothing wrong at the end of the post to pointing to more resources, pointing to pages that have services that you sell that happen to offer a more comprehensive solution to the problem. So those are four, I think, of the big ones that I see over and over again.
Well, if a business owner is, you know, trying to decide, do they spend their resources and time on an e-newsletter or on blogging, what would you recommend?
You know, I am of the philosophy that even with an e-newsletter, I used to have both. I had an e-newsletter and a blog, and I decided to, for many, many reasons, I decided to move just to the blog, and I don't have my weekly e-newsletter anymore. But I think that e-newsletters, you know, it just happens to be, you know, who your audience is and what you're trying to cultivate. One of them is kind of a push marketing, and the other one is a pull marketing. I don't know if you're deciding one or the other. You know, my heart still goes with the blog for lots of reasons, and the blog is so more SEO rich, and you know, if people are Googling for a solution to a problem, your blog post is going to come up, and not an e-newsletter. So, I especially for professional services, I think that if you had to decide between the two of them, I would go blog. For a time, I had both of them, and the great thing about having them both, if you can do it, is that you can cross-promote back and forth, and if you have different people on your e-newsletter list than you have on your blog, then you can talk about something in your e-newsletter and point them over to a link. Oh, and on my recent blog post, I also went into more detail on this, and I found a lot of cross-pollination, if you will, mm-hmm. between the e-newsletter in the blog.
Yeah. And I found, like you said, it really does enhance that search engine optimization and helps people to find you, because if the newsletter is sitting in a newsletter program somewhere and not necessarily living on the web in a way that's easy to find, the blog definitely increases traffic because it's integrated much more closely with your website, which is already hopefully SEO capable and optimized.
Exactly.
And I mentioned in the intro that you have a new ebook called Guide to Showing Up Online, and I've enjoyed revisiting some of your blog posts and reading some new ones that you've included in that. And in one chapter, there was, you had some particular advice that was very powerful for this perfectionistic introvert. And it was called the Nike 6-Step Guide to Writing Success. And since I'm guessing I'm not alone in my perfectionism, would you mind sharing a few of those steps with us?
I would love to. You know, I fight it all the time, perfectionist. You know, and especially if you're trying to write, you know, you don't need to have that perfectionist gene sitting around there bothering you, but I understand totally, and I think a lot of introverts are that way. I don't want to put it out into the world until it's perfect. And so what I was trying to do with the Nike Guide to Writing Success is to get to the root of the fear that many of us have when we start blogging. And I've been blogging for so long now that it's not quite, and the more you practice and the more you just keep getting those posts out and even journaling or however you want to just keep writing and practicing regularly, you get rid of a lot of that fear. But I've noticed even more with the clients I'm starting to take on who are the beginning bloggers. There is a fear that you don't have anything important to say. There's a fear that you're not interesting enough, that it's all been said and there's nothing left to say. So when you sit down, you're kind of almost paralyzed. You're freezing up, not knowing how to start and not knowing what to say. And then if you do start, you have that inner critic. I call mine Mrs. Brumbly because I had a very bad experience with a fourth grade teacher who used to just rip my work apart with a red pencil. And I think everyone has their own Mrs. Brumbly. She might not be a teacher. She might be a parent or an older sibling. Someone sitting on your shoulder when you write. And sometimes when I used to start out, I used to just almost feel Mrs. Brumbly sitting there. So my steps are to get the blog post out before the fire goes out. And so I just had 6, and they're a little bit playful steps, but they're meant to kind of get you to laugh a little bit about it and loosen up a little bit. Okay, step number 1 is get rid of the word creative. People toss the word around all the time. Everyone's creative. You've got a creative resources, a creative group here and there, and to me that's just a lot of pressure. When I sit down to write, I don't want somebody standing over and telling me I better be creative, I better be unique, or nobody will want to read what I write. So when I think of creative people, I think of the geniuses, the artists, the visual artists, the novelists, the actors, and I just freeze up. Who am I to say that I'm among those lucky creative few? So it just makes me fret more. So you're not coming up with a creative blog post. You're sitting down to write an interesting post that's going to be helpful to your readers. So just kind of, I would say, deep stick that word creative, or at least for me, I don't even like it anymore. The second step is put your Mrs. Brumbly in a box. And I tell people to just go through your mind, and whoever that person is, whoever just made you feel like doo-doo when you sat down to write, that nothing was ever good enough, I say shrink that person. I take my Mrs. Brumbly, and I still remember what she looks like because she had such an impact on my life. I shrink her down to the size of a small rat. Then I pick her up by the collar, and this is all mentally, of course. I toss her into a shoebox. And if you want to be more humane, go ahead and puncture some little holes in the top of the shoebox so she can breathe.
As long as she doesn't shout out through them.
But exactly. If you can still hear her muffled sniveling because she's going to try,
yeah.
I pick up the shoebox, and I actually mentally put it outside on the doorstep. And if I don't do this, she'll be constantly interrupting me. You can't start a sentence with the word and is a conjunction. Or what? A one-word sentence? This way, if you just get rid of her, she'll be out of your way and you won't even hear her. The third step, and I think this is really, really one of the most important steps, is don't overanalyze the process. You're not supposed to understand how writing works. You're not supposed to even think about how it works. And the best way is to just sit down and just start writing. Stephen King, the horror novelist, has a classic called On Writing, and he refers to the boys in the basement. And I just love this. I just love this analogy. Your ideas are wild and crazy, and they are running all over the place, and they're probably running around in the basement, but you know what? They desperately want to be let out of the basement. So Stephen King says, let the boys in the basement out. Mm-hmm. And they're a part of your right brain, and it's the side where the party's going on, where all the interesting things are happening, so let them out. Trust in the process, because a lot of times your best ideas are going to come from the boys in the basement. So let them out and listen to them as you're writing. They might sound a little outrageous, but if you take a closer look, they might have a brilliant way of explaining just the exact thing you're trying to explain in your blog post or the thing that you're trying to help your readers solve. Step number four, this step is believe that you're going to write something beautiful just this one time. And that's what I say to myself every time I sit down to write. Okay, all I have to do is just write this one article, just this one piece. Because if you think in the long term and you're committing long term to be perfect every single time you write, that's just really depressing and overwhelming to think about. So when I finish, I always say to myself, okay, that was my one good idea. I'll probably never have a good idea again, but there it was. There was my one good one. And amazingly, though, you can have good ideas time and time again, but just take them one at a time. And you do have many more ideas as good as that one, and you should trust yourself on it. The fifth step is pay attention to when your good ideas come to you. And in blogging classes, we have a lot of fun talking about where are you when your brilliant idea strikes you. And some people are watching TV, and some people are driving, and they're trying to figure out, you know, how to pull over on the side of the road to get that idea down. Some people have a tape recorder in their car so that they can record it when they're driving, because when it's gone, it's gone. And I think you probably know what I mean. It's probably happened to you. It can be challenging, really challenging. I have my good ideas happen right between the time that I'm barely awake and I'm falling asleep. So that presents a problem. I've learned that I have to keep the nightstand, the lamp, and ready, and the pen, and the little spiral notebook. I have to wake myself up and write them down because they'll be gone and I won't remember them in the morning. Bob, my husband and business partner, it's in the shower for him. I know every morning, and this is every morning when he gets out and he comes to the breakfast table, I'll just say, okay, what was your big idea this time? And he will have an idea, because it's when water's pouring over him for some reason that he gets all his
ideas. That's great. He needs a waterproof notepad for the shower.
He does. And you know, there's somebody on Twitter that has a shower thoughts or something, and they have actually made something to hang in your shower, and I keep meaning to order that for him.
Oh, that's
awesome.
But just
pay attention to your creative times and think of a way, and that's the most important thing, think of a way to record that thought, because it's going to be gone if you don't. And then the last one, the reason I called it the Nike Guide, that my last piece of advice is just do it. Just sit down and write. Don't wait for the mood to strike. And some of the best writers in the world write through sludge and muckiness, and they write through depressing days and times so they don't want to go to the keyboard. They just write, and they just keep consistently writing. Have a journal, maybe 15 to 30 minutes, I suggest, of free writing every day. Don't worry about what comes out of you. Don't organize it. Don't even go back and look at it. Just go to the next day and do your 15 to 30 minutes. Sometimes when you keep a notebook like that and you go back through later, you'll find with your highlighting pen you can mark things. This is an interesting idea. I wonder if this would make a good blog post. So you'd be surprised that there will be some little gems that will come out of the rest of the stuff, which is sometimes a little bit of garbage that comes out. So I think that this free writing also frees up your right brain, and that's where the boys in the basement live. So those are my six steps to try to avoid some of that perfectionism that I think all of us have when we sit down to write.
Yeah, thank you for very much. And as you were talking, I especially when you were talking about saying just this time, you know, I'm going to write something beautiful, I think to Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. And she did a marvelous TED Talk. I'm not sure how long ago, but she talked about how when she wrote her book, you know, she was so in the moment, and that's exactly what it was, that she didn't think about the future. You know, she didn't think about, is this going to be a bestseller? Is it going to be a movie? Is it going to be popular and read by book groups? It just was what it was. And she was just right there. And as she was in this TED Talk talking about, well, if I'd known then, you know, I would have gotten really uptight and been like, oh my gosh, what am I going to write after that that's going to be the sequel? Is it going to live up? You know, the pressure. And so your advice about saying, you know, just write now, and a lot of what you say makes me think about, you know, so much value in being able to stay in the present moment and to release the past, release, you know, release the Mrs. Brumleys, and to let the boys out of the basement, and then to release any anxiety about the future, like, am I ever going to be able to write again, you know, after I've done something good or anything like that, just to not even worry about what will people think. Just write what comes to you in that moment.
Right, and I had one guy who said something incredibly funny. He said, this is really cheap therapy. You know? It has all that anger and all the bad feelings come out along with some of the good stuff that comes out, and it's, you know, I do think writing is therapy sometimes, too.
Oh, yeah. And I think of Julia Cameron and The Artist's Way in Morning Pages, of just getting, you know, sitting down, like you said, take 15, 20 minutes and just free write. And it doesn't matter what you write, just get something out. And it is therapeutic. Absolutely. So thank you very much for sharing those six steps. And I have a feeling those are going to resonate with a lot of people. And so when you're not blogging, you get a chance to take a break. and I ask this question of all of my guests, and that is, if you were granted on a year's vacation on Introvert Island and all expenses were paid and you had room in your suitcase for only three books, what would you take with you and why?
Okay, all expenses are paid, huh?
Indeed, yes.
Okay, I'm thinking the Bible would be the first one. It's kind of my guide for life. I think I would be incredibly lost without it. So I would need that to be wherever I am. That would be book number one. Number two is kind of weird, but I'd say Roger's Thesaurus. And I guess that's a writer's answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking Introvert Island would be the perfect setting to finish my book. And I can't really finish my book without my thesaurus. So I'm thinking if I can fit three books in, maybe I could squeeze that laptop into and a bunch of batteries or something. So unless it was Introvert Island with a really nice resort, you know, with Wi-Fi. I'm getting it.
Wi-Fi, yeah. I was going to say, no Kindles, but, you know, laptops to finish a book are good.
Okay. And then the third one would be Les Miserables, and it's Victor Hugo's 19th century classic novel, and I have that. I read it probably three times a year just because, and on an island, I suppose, even more so. It connects me with humanity. It helps me to see and remember the beauty in people, and it's just beautiful prose. It reaffirms our humanness, and if there weren't a lot of other people around, I would need a reaffirmation of humanity and people. So those would be my three ones.
And I suppose a question about Les Mis is, you know, book or music, or, you know, the operetta musical, which one is better?
Oh, no, of course the book with all that long prose and those long sentences and those big words that you just have to just ponder over and go back and reread. And it's the flow of the words, and here I am a writer again, huh?
Exactly. That answer does not surprise me. So Judy, how can people learn more about you and your products and services?
Okay, my hub is my blog, and Chris Brogan talks about your blog being your hub, and from there you you direct traffic out and you bring traffic in, and you have your social media formats like Biznic and LinkedIn and Facebook. But the blog would be www.catseye, and cat has an S in it, C-A-T-S, CatseyeWriter.com. And there you can sign up. If you find the blog post about becoming a better blogger, you can sign up or subscribe to the blog post. You can connect with me by clicking the buttons for Twitter, Biznic, LinkedIn. I just started my Cat's Eye Writer biz page on Facebook, and I'm really, really, really anxious to get people to come over to that page and follow or like or whatever, so they can follow some more tips that I put out through the Cat's Eye Writer Facebook page. And then my services, of course, are also on my blog, the blog coaching, the blog critique, the about page services, and the online bio writing services. So it's all there, one kind of easy address, www.catseyewriter.com. Also, my brand new book, the one you mentioned, The Guide to Showing Up Online, is also available on my blog.
Yeah, and I can attest to its usefulness, and you know, I highly recommend to anybody listening that you do join Judy on Facebook on her Cat's Eye Writers page, as well as sign up for her blog, because it never lands in my inbox that there's not something extremely valuable and often very timely. I'm like, how did Judy know that I was struggling with that? So it's I always find Judy, I find your blogs extremely informative and a joy to read. You know, clearly you are a writer, and it's always a pleasure to read what you share with the world. So thank you so much for being here with us today. I really appreciated it.
Thank you, Beth. I really loved being here.
This is Beth Below, the Introvert Entrepreneur. A very special thank you to Judy Dunn for joining us today, and thank you for spending this time with me. Join me each week for insights, information, and inspiration for introverts who know that success is an inside job. If you'd like to learn more, please visit me online at theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You can also find me and a growing community of introvert entrepreneurs on Facebook at facebook.com/theintrovertentrepreneur. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.